Welcome to the Ideas Lab Predictor podcast from the University of Birmingham. In each edition, we hear from an expert in a different field who gives us insider information on key trends, upcoming events, and what they think the near future holds.
Today, I'm with Dr. Robin May, who is Senior Lecturer and Lister Fellow in Infectious Disease. So, Robin, tell us what that means. What do you do?
What we are basically interested in is the interaction between infectious agents, so bacteria, fungi, viruses, parasites, and the things they infect, which are typically humans, but also to a certain extent other animals too.
So you look at all the microbes that I'm carrying around with me every day that I wouldn't necessarily know anything about.
Yeah, that's right. So one of the things that we're particularly interested in is a category of pathogen called opportunistic pathogens, opportunistic infections. And these are organisms that very often cause no disease at all. So they may live on your skin, for example, or in the back of your throat. And they're fine. You know, we will have them all the time and they cause no problem at all. But given the right circumstances, so for example, if one's immune system starts to become weakened, which can be very severe, for example, if you develop AIDS, but it can also just be a heavy night on the tiles, which weakens your immune system sufficiently. These organisms can cause disease, and we're very interested in what enables them to do that and when they make that kind of switch between being a peaceful carrier and an aggressive pathogen.
And you were saying there's actually a tremendous number of bacteria on a person at any one time.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy. And we're only really starting to get an understanding of that over the last few years. But it's now very clear that the average healthy human being is massively outnumbered, actually, by the microbes that live on them and in them. The major source of these is the gut, is the intestine. And it's estimated that you have about 100 trillion bacteria living in your healthy intestine, which is 10 times more bacterial cells than your own human cells, in fact. So you could say, you know, to a first approximation, most people are actually 90% bacteria and only 10% people.
And the bacteria that I have aren't necessarily the same ones that everybody else has.
No, that's exactly right. It's very clear now that most people's so-called microbiome, i.e. the total complement of microbiological organisms that live on and in you, are very unique. They're different between different people. And in fact, they're even different between locations on the same person. And so there was very recent work coming out of the USA in which they showed that the bacteria that live on a person's hand are really radically different between your left hand and your right hand, to the point that both hands have about 150 different bacterial species on them, but 80% of those species differ between your left and your right hand, basically saying that each of your hands is its own unique environment, and therefore there's a huge specificity on a very small scale, if you like.
So could this be used for forensics, for example, to work out if I've touched something?
That's a very interesting idea that's just starting to take shape. Really, in the last few years, we've started to gain enough information about the diversity and number of these organisms to start to do things like that. And indeed, there's a lot of interest, particularly from forensics, at looking, for example, as to whether you can identify who last typed on a keyboard or who last picked up a mug based not on their fingerprint or their DNA, but on the DNA that's been left behind by the bacteria and fungi that are growing on their skin. And that's actually looking quite promising. So it's entirely possible that in a few years' time, we might be talking about people's microbiological fingerprint in the same way that we talk about their real fingerprint.
This is all really fascinating, but what happens when those same microorganisms that are sitting there start to go bad and start to do some damage?
Well, that's a really interesting area of science and a growing problem clinically. Many of these organisms that live on your hand or in your gut or in the back of your throat are perfectly fine normally and cause no disease. But if you kind of give them an inch, they'll take a mile. They're real sort of fickle friends in that sense. And the classic example of that is Candida albicans. That's a fungus that we all carry, but very rarely causes disease unless you become so-called immunocompromised, i.e. your immune system isn't working well. And then it causes what we know as thrush, genital thrush or oral thrush.
So you're saying I've definitely got this at the moment. What else might I have? What else am I likely to be carrying around that I don't necessarily know about?
Lots and lots.
Yeah.
I mean, you're probably carrying quite a lot that we don't know about, and in fact, no one knows about. I mean, it's very clear at the moment that we have identified only a tiny fraction of the available microbes in the world. And so potentially there are all sorts of exciting things that are living in the back of your throat. What we already know about are many of the major killers, if you like. So perhaps the classic example is TB, tuberculosis, where about 30% of the world's population is infected with TB. And yet only 10% of them will go on to develop clinical symptoms, and the rest essentially have it as a so-called asymptomatic infection. And the list of those is endless. You're probably carrying staphylococci, maybe streptococci. You have a different fungi, so cryptococcus, which is a fungus that we work on. Most people are thought to be latently infected. And for most of us, this is no problem, and you will die with it rather than of it.
That's nice to know. So what does this mean for the future? Not necessarily just for me personally, but in general for the future.
Well, hopefully for you personally, nothing too serious.
Yeah.
For the world at large, there are really two aspects to this, I think. One is the negative side. We're living at a time in history with far more immunocompromised humans on the planet than ever before. This is partly because of the HIV pandemic, with millions of people living with a virus that essentially destroys your immune system, but also because of more positive things, for example, organ transplants, in which you might have long-term immunosuppression, and an aging population, people who live longer, but they live longer with impaired immunity. And this means that opportunistic infections, like the ones we've been talking about, are a bigger and bigger problem, and learning how to control them is a big issue. Related to that is the fact that these organisms themselves now find themselves with opportunities to grow for longer in larger numbers and to mix with other organisms in these so-called immunocompromised hosts. And there's the prospect that that may throw up novel mutants or novel strains of these diseases which are more dangerous.
So we've got a larger bunch of people with compromised immune systems, where all these organisms have a chance to have a bit of a field day.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, it's an interesting situation that we find ourselves in, of having essentially a habitat for these organisms that's larger than any habitat they've had before. You know, throughout most of history, they've been constrained to the occasional case, and now suddenly they find themselves with a massive population to breed and reproduce and recombine in. The other side of that, of course, is a more positive spin, in that we are learning more and more and more about these kind of complex ecological arrangements on people's skin and in people's bodies. And that offers the prospect of a whole new and exciting branch of medicine. It's clear now already that many diseases may be strongly influenced by the kind of bacteria and fungi you're carrying around, things like Crohn's disease, irritable bowel syndrome. And these are undoubtedly also influenced by our own genetic predisposition. And so the time is probably rapidly coming when you will go to your doctor and your doctor will sequence your own genes, the genes of the things that live in you and on you, and prescribe a personalized solution to your disease, in that they may say your particular genetic complement means you're much more susceptible to this particular strain of Staphylococcus, and therefore we'll give you an antibiotic that treats that strain but nothing else. And I think that's a really exciting and very promising branch of medicine that's really just starting to occur.
So I'll be able to go to my GP and they will sequence my genome in the future.
I think that's right. I think very soon, certainly within our lifetime, probably a lot sooner, personalised genomes are likely to be de rigueur, really, for people, certainly with access to very good healthcare systems.
So if I have my whole genome sequenced, is this something I'll be carrying around on a memory stick and I'll just plug it in when I go to the doctors and go, well, here you go, will it be in their computer, or is that not a question that you can answer?
I think it's a question I can answer, yes. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, yeah. I mean, I think realistically, especially the move to personalised patient notes, is that we might all very soon have ourselves a little memory stick that have all of our patient histories, our genome, potentially the genome of our children, all sorts of exciting stuff, which raises the question of data security and these kind of things, of course.
Is there anything that you worry about, knowing so much about infectious disease?
I think, like most people, I worry about all the things which I probably shouldn't worry about. And in particular, if one has a young family, you do worry totally disproportionately. And I'd be the first person to say that my view of risk is just as bad as everybody else's.
So when you become a parent, yeah, and everything you know scientifically still gets skewed.
I think when you become a parent, yeah, all of your scientific logic goes out the window and you panic every time they sniff. But I guess that's kind of, going to be that way for the rest of the life.
Dr. Robin May, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
This podcast and others in the series are available on the Ideas Lab website, www.ideaslabuk.com. On the website, you can find out how to email us with comments, questions, or suggestions for future topics for the podcast. There's also information on the free support Ideas Lab has to offer to TV and radio producers, new media producers, and journalists. The interviewer for the Ideas Lab Predictor podcast was Lucy Vernal, and the producer was Andy Tootell.